Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSB Magazine. You're listening to a new Redefining Security podcast. Have you ever thought that we are selling cybersecurity insincerely, buying it indiscriminately, and deploying it ineffectively? Perhaps we are. So let's look at how we can organize a successful InfoSec program that integrates people, process, technology, and culture to drive growth and protect business value. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.
HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTAlliance.net. Archer empowers organizations to manage multiple dimensions of risk on one platform with on-premises and software-as-a-service offerings, and quickly implement industry-standard processes and best practices for advanced risk management maturity, informed decision-making, and enhanced business performance. Learn more at archerirm.com.
This is Sean Martin. You're very welcome to a new Redefining Security podcast here on ITSB Magazine. And today, we're looking at networking fundamentals. What the heck does that even mean? And being as far away from the network as humanly possible, I don't know. So I have somebody joining who does, and that's a good friend, Meg Layton. Good to see you, Meg.
Good to see you too. Thanks for having me on.
And to give some folks some context, a brief word about some of the things you've done. Obviously, we know each other from our time at the Big Yellow many years ago. You've done a lot of things to help a lot of organizations with security. Touch on a few of them that makes
sure.
Sense.
So a long time ago in a world far, far away, actually, my first job in technology was network administrator on Novell NetWare. So that was a long time ago at a small nonprofit. And after that, I moved to cellular telecommunications company doing business in Africa. And there it was not only a much larger global network, but it was cellular networks and a bunch of other network technologies and platforms. And that was before I came into the Big Yellow, as we call it. But that's where I developed my passion for security, was while we were trying to protect this much larger global network, which had all these, you know, at the time, cellular modems and connections into the internet and my cell towers and my connections up to my Intelsat satellites and all these sort of things. Protecting a network in that capacity is much more intense than I had been exposed to. And so then I moved over to a company which was acquired by Symantec, and in Symantec's role have been moved around and designed networks and protected networks of varying sizes and shapes and colors.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's the interesting part is the varying sizes and shapes. And I don't know, I remember back in the day where you actually had to think about the type of connection you're going to make outside of your four walls, right? Is it a T1?
Right.
And a lot of that you just take for granted now, but that's still part of the network. And even that looks...
It's absolutely different. Part of the network. And I often think about that as it looks wildly different, but we've been through things that look wildly different. I'll never forget, we were building a lab in one of our old offices, and it was very clear that the people in the lab had been very used to Cat5 cabling, and this lab was fiber cabling. And they couldn't understand why things weren't working until I realized that
my crimper's not working.
No, they were rolling over the cables in their rolling chairs, and of course fiber being glass, the cables kept breaking. So about a week in, every time they laid a new cable, it would no longer work, and they didn't know why. So, you know, we've been through some of that. The network components have changed up, but the concepts don't change. Like, you still need to protect those things. You need to know how you got the information from A to B, and you need to know what path it's taking and what are the guardrails in order to make sure that your information gets there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll touch on this, the CIA.
Right.
From end to end. Let's stick with the view of then to now. And you mentioned NetWare, Novell. There have been many other network operating systems to hit the shelves, pun intended there. What's the same? What's different? The layers, the stack, the protocols?
So your protocols change. Absolutely, your protocols change, but the concepts don't change that much. Your layers are pretty much the same. People are still trying to communicate over those layers. And while your protocols change, but the whole concept of you're trying to communicate from here to there and make sure that you hit the, like, maybe you want a specific encryption, your encryption layers change, like a lot of that changes, but your requirements don't change. Like, you have to be encrypted, right? Whether it's a machine in your data center or you're sending it up to AWS, I don't care. You still want to know where along that path your network is encrypted, right? And whether or not your data is safe. I think the challenge that people have right now is that networks are so ubiquitous. I grew up, much like you, in a land of NetWare, so the connections were very solid for me. Like, I knew how to draw data diagrams and say it is going from here to there to there to there. And I often think that if I had to learn networking now, I would find it much more challenging because there's lots more. Like, we were on point to point a lot of the time, but now networking is everywhere. Like, you walk through an airport with your phone and it's trying to connect to 17 different networks at a time. And that just wasn't the case. And it's relying much more on people knowing whether or not who they're connecting with or what they're connecting with is somebody that they should trust. And so I think it's much heavier connection on the concept of the zero trust model almost, and making sure that people know how to implement that and know whether this thing should be trusted and what else is in there that maybe I don't want to trust.
Yeah. And as we're talking about this, I can't help but think about how we as a society try to abstract everything. We don't want to know how something works. We just want it to work. And I'm wondering, is that the same situation here with networks and networking?
So I think it is. I think we tend to not want to know things, you know, but the reality is when you think about it, like, we're all threat modeling all the time. So to me, networking is not very different than just like the human network that we all live in, right? I know you, and I do a certain amount of assessment of, okay, is that somebody I want to know? Do we speak the same language? Can I trust him with this information? What, like, we're all doing those threat modeling all the time. Your threat model may not look like mine, but we're doing it in our heads. We're just not really thinking about it. It's unconscious to us. The problem with networking security is you sort of have to be conscious about it because so many people are barraging you at all times trying to find those ins and outs, right?
And you said my threat model may not look like yours. And that's assuming I take a moment to think about my environment, my risk.
Right.
And I may not even care nor know about your environment, right, and risk to say, oh, well, I look different, so I have to change from your. I may, in fact, just use some framework and some standards controls models to say, this is how I'm going to view and manage my environment, right?
Right, exactly. And that concept of risk, everybody's risk is different, right? Like, they may say, you may be a parent and you may have have a privacy model that's in place for you for your children. And that's not unlike organizations that have, you know, different risk models depending on what it is that they're trying to protect. And they may have different privacy models. Some may be bound by HIPAA, some may be bound by, I don't know, what else, PCI. And they have their own privacy models that they are trying to achieve. And if you're going in to design a network, you need to understand that. You don't get to say, this is the way I want to do it. You have to understand what their risk model is from the outset in order to build something that A, services their risk today, but B, can grow and be grown and maintained to the risk tomorrow. Because that, I don't think the network security is changing. I think the risk models are changing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then, and I'm thinking, what we want to get to, and let's get there. Networking fundamentals 101, or networking 101. What are some of the fundamentals? Because there's so much going on. I mean, it's applications, talking to applications and people interacting with them, and services and APIs and RPAs and all this stuff, right? Has to get from A to B to Z, presumably not through a point-to-point like you described earlier. So how do we establish a set of fundamentals? Do the old ones move with us, or do we have to rethink them? What do we do?
So I think the old ones move with you, the original ones. So understand how your traffic flows, whether you do that with block diagrams. I still draw block diagrams. Like, my whole team understands that if they're trying
Visio's
to explain.
Visio's your friend?
Yes, but even if you're just whiteboarding it, I need those arrows to be like, and then it goes this way, and then this happens, because that's how I understand, right? I'm old school. But if you can show me how the traffic flows, then conceptually I can see where it might go off the rails. If you can't show it to me and you're just throwing words on a paper, it is much more difficult for me. So understand how your traffic flows and be able to explain that to another person. Understand how to read traffic. You don't have to be super good at understanding your logs or reading through PCAPs, but you have to know how to do it. You have to look at it and say, where are my logs? Like, that's question number one. Like, would I know if something went awry and something went off the rails in my network? And where do I find those logs? You have to know that. You have to know how to open it. I'm a huge believer in cheat sheets and checklists. Like, I don't do it. I don't open my logs or my PCAPs without being like, okay, how do I do this again? Because it's not something I do every day, but I do have to know how to do it. And I have to know what I'm looking at when I look at it. Understand your basics of encryption and which encryption protocols have fallen out of favor or not strong enough for the environment you're in. And again, recognizing that's driven by the environment you're in. So I teach some risk management classes, and I always tell them, like, you have to understand what the environment is willing to risk. You don't get to dictate that, but you have to be able to explain, this is the risk in your current environment, and this is what you have to be able to accept. That's pretty big, right? And then understand the basics of your protocols, because you have to understand the choices you're making when you're making your communications. You have to be able to say which protocol works best for this, but then you, as time goes on, you have to keep an eye on that. Because the requirements change, or something new has been released, or something new has been hacked, and maybe you don't want to use that one anymore, because it has introduced a new level of risk. So I don't think it's those basics that have changed. It's the maintaining the eye of the risk over time that has changed for people, because I think a lot of people expect it to be a set it and forget it. You used to be able to draw an old diagram, and unless somebody went and moved the server, like, that was your network diagram. That's not the case anymore.
And so what I'm wondering is how, I don't know if some of the best practices also still apply, because we can talk about segmentation.
Right. Network segmentation is a big thing.
And I always think availability always seems to be the priority. We forget the C and the I.
Sometimes. Especially so agree. So yeah. It sort of depends again on your environment. If you're not, I don't know, a storefront, you know, availability might not be a big deal. You might want to maintain the confidentiality or integrity of your system much more so than the availability. But I used to do a talk called The More Things Change, The More They Stay the Same. And I'm kind of paraphrasing because I haven't given the talk in like 10 years at this point, right? But it's sort of like your common themes kind of echo, right? You know, our big deal back then was attachments and email. Like, if you look at how right now ransomware is a big thing, like your threat has changed, but the concept of the challenge hasn't, right? So you have to understand that the threat has changed, but its method of delivery is still your email. So how are you securing your email, and how are you protecting your users from those sort of things, right? Still relevant. Still important to know. So if you don't have your email in your threat model, then you're kind of stuck, right? You haven't considered a pretty big issue there. So you have to think through those. A lot of people assume point products are taking care of it. But the point of drawing out your overall architecture is to say, where are my gaps? What am I doing about it? And have I considered those other entry points, right? Yes, I may have this here protecting, my web page, but have I considered my APIs? And are they protected by the same thing? Are they coming in that same path, or are they coming in a different way? Because a lot of organizations just assume whoever configured that thing 5 years ago is fine, but then you forgot to tell them you put it in API, right? And so it's not even going through that same path.
Yeah, let's explore that a little bit more, because I think we talked about this briefly before we started recording. Is that we can set up a network in certain ways, or we do set up a network in certain ways because we can, and that's the way the technology works, right? So. Right. This is how it looks because that's how it comes out of the box, and or the business says, I need to do this, and with that this comes all these other things.
Right.
and so I'm wondering how, from a fundamentals perspective, how do we take a step back and really connect the dots between this is what we need to do, this is what we should do, versus just doing it?
So that's a good question. I'm a big believer.
Who drives that? I mean, does security have a say in that? Or they're just always going to get a network that looks however it is?
So I'm a big believer in involving security from the beginning, because it is much easier to do that at the beginning, involving your security as well as your risk team at the beginning. Some companies now have different teams for that. And if they're not all looking at the design from that point, and ideally at least once a year after that, it's unclear on like not everybody is moving towards your common goal. I'm a big believer in security as a ever thought, not an afterthought. So if you do it at all stages of your cycle, you're much more able to protect what you're trying to protect. If you try to jam it in at the end, or do as you say, okay, this is what we need right now because something happened and now we need to put this in. Let's face it, a lot of people are in that situation. It's much more difficult to make sure that you've put it in correctly or put it in such a way that it protects against the next thing. So I'm a big believer that lightning's not going to strike once, strike twice, I mean. So if you're putting in something because you're trying to protect against what already happened, like you've already failed. You actually have to put it in and be like, okay, there was this gap, this happened, but what else can I protect against that's in my gap, and make sure that you're doing it with that eye, because that's really what's important.
Yeah. And not having my feet in the trenches, I can only make some assumptions here, which is always a risky prospect. But I have a feeling, and I'd like either your confirmation or denial in use cases, if I am right, that if you take and accept a network in whatever way it gets built without security up front, you're likely having to set up compensating controls and protection methods and additional layers of security and monitoring and response and patching and all these other things that if only you had said up front, if you take that part out,
right,
solve this business problem a different way, we can simplify the network, we can tune it up. So all those gaps that you're trying to compensate with all these other things
right,
don't even exist, right? And you can kind of relieve yourself.
Yes. So, and a large part of that is understanding how to hold that conversation. So for instance, you know, your auditor may come in and be like, okay, show me your firewalls. But a lot of people, you know, once they go to the cloud, they're not so much using firewalls anymore. Their protections are done through security groups and things that are still managing the perimeter, but the terminology has changed and the way that you're protecting things has changed. And if you don't know how to cross that bridge and hold that conversation in an intelligent way, everybody gets really frustrated and leaves the room. But the concepts are still there. You still want to protect the perimeter. You still want to protect your core, and you're still going to check those network segmentations. You just have to know the tools to get there and hold those conversations intelligently. Does that make sense?
It does. And I mean, I painted a very Pollyannish picture of getting to define a brand new network from scratch, which is not reality.
Does anybody get to do that?
Very, very few, and unless it is in the cloud, right? Would you describe
yes.
Of things? But so maybe some thoughts or guidance on, or perhaps even resources for how to reground oneself in the basics and the fundamentals, where it might feel like everything's hair on fire because the sprawl of the current network just continues to grow and the complexity is off the charts and we're, the threat model is our, the thing beating us in the head. So we can't even look at
right.
all the other stuff. So how do we ground ourselves as network security practitioners in the,
so fire? I think you first start with your organization and what they use as their guiding star. So if you're, I don't know, under compliance boundaries, you want to familiarize yourself with what they are and what they require, because that's your first kind of form of violation that you don't want to throw out. So if you're not PCI, if you're HIPAA, if you're SOC 1 or SOC 2, if it's, you know, whatever it is, you want to be like, okay, this is one of our guiding things, right? And then your second thing is when you want to look at how you're architecting your network or even currently what you have. So I'm a big believer in just make sure you know what you have and know your assets and know what they are and know where they are and know your information and the flow of that information. Like, I don't care how you do it. Make a little list. Do you have a database? That'd be ideal that you have a list. Like, you're not managing it in Excel spreadsheets, but do it somewhere. And then you look and say, okay, what are my exposures? And think about both the known and the unknown. And when I say the unknown, of course, you can't list out your unknown, but you can list out some things. You can list out, what if I have an employee who wants to do the right thing, who is doing the wrong thing, but for the right reason? Now, you know, I'm not a fan of the term insider threat because that leaves people thinking people are intentionally doing something bad. But the reality is, like, right now, people don't think about protecting the network that they're on. So they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing, but it might not be intentional. They're not being intentionally evil. they're sending an email to the wrong person, they're, you know, responding to the wrong email, like whatever it is that they're doing, they're on somebody else's network by accident because they clicked the wrong link. I don't care what it is that they're doing. They're still your insider threat, right? And you can't predict when they're going to do that, but you do have to think about what that what happens. And that's where your network segmentation concepts come in handy. Like, how are you protecting against those kind of accidental wanderings of people and things like that?
And are there many scenarios like that? Because lateral movement is something that I have heard. I don't know that I've heard it recently a lot, but lateral movement has been something that
seems
like you could prepare for, yet it still seems like it's a big challenge to manage.
I think that the challenge is because people don't necessarily know that they're doing it. If you try to think about those scenarios that aren't necessarily the evil intent, like the evil intent, let's face it, gets the headlines and everybody worries about it and somebody was evil, you know, that's all fine and good. But the reality is, I have this theory of dorm network security. So dorm network security to me, and I use it in my college classes because they all immediately know what I'm talking about. I'm like, look, when you were home, you worried about you. And you like went in and out of the house and you didn't really pay any attention to everyone else. When you have moved into the dorm, whether or not you leave the dorm door propped open for the pizza guy to be able to deliver your pizza so you don't have to answer the front door, well, now you've put your entire dorm at risk. Like, this is how people need to think about their networks. And, like, sometimes there's RAs in charge of the dorm. Those are your network security engineers who are going to come and be very angry if you've left the door propped open for your pizza guy. Of course, your pizza is important, right? But everybody else can wander in and out of that dorm and never use their keys and not be authorized. And that, you know, that's on you now. So they're not intentionally causing that issue. They want their pizza. We get that. But that's not a risk that you want to inflict on the other users on your network. So I think
what's the pizza dorm in real life example? On the network.
So I think it is this sort of, I'm just going to set up this file share is a great example of that, you know? And they're like, I just want, you know, or I want to send these out to my box file because somebody else wants to do it. Like, there's a lot of that, I think, that still happens. You know, shadow IT is still a big thing where people are setting up applications all the time. And it's very hard for the network people to understand what's even happening on their network from that perspective.
And give me, as we kind of get close to the end here, we touched on a little bit, but the cloud. So give me some insight into how that works in terms of network security. Is it the same team, different teams? Should it be, shouldn't it be?
So you know, the difference between the cloud and your data center is it's just somebody else's data center. So this whole concept of I'll send it to AWS and they'll take care of my security, or I'll send it to whatever your cloud is, they won't, unless you sit down with them and say, this is what I expect of you and this is what you should expect of me. So your team always needs to be super integrated. There is, if you are assuming somebody is protecting you, just by nature of they could, if you assigned that work to them, but you forgot to mention it, like that's on you. you have to be super clear on where, you know, who's assigning the users, who's putting up those protections, what are they protecting you from? Things like that, even down to like, yes, it could be encrypted at risk, but if you didn't hit that button, then it's not, you know, kind of deal. So that's on you.
But are there new things or additional things that come with the cloud that the basics of the traditional on-prem just won't carry over?
There's some of them. I think the you know, if you have been stuck like I have been recently reviewing security groups in, and IAM policies and things like that in your cloud configurations, they are as complicated as firewall rules used to be, trying to trace things through and make sure things are getting from here to there, and what you want to get from here to there is exactly what you want. And they are, you know, you'll get through some of them and then you end up with, you know, the any rule that you used to end up in firewalls. You could be like, what is this doing here? You know, kind of thing. So you still want to sort through them with that same kind of forensic detail of pulling back layer by layer and thinking, okay, this takes me over there. Where can I get from there? And sort through that way, because it's so important to travel that, like, travel that path of the data end to end and understand what your protections are end to end and make sure you didn't miss anything. So that's where my diagrams come in. I'm constantly bemoaning I have yet to find a good way to map those out in a diagram I would like to see. So but you also asked about resources, so I'm going to tell you that one of the things I recommend for people, whether you've been in this business for a long time or just think you want to refresh yourself because we're talking about things and you're thinking, oh yes, what models apply? Oh yes, what are the latest encryptions? Like, fine. The one benefit of this past year in particular is so many people have put resources out that are so valuable. So find yourself a group that wants to learn the same thing as you are. I work with the Women's Society Cyber Jitsu, and they have a lot of beginning classes, beginning network fundamentals, and a lot of things in different regions or online that I would recommend people sign up for. AWS themselves have a lot of things available to kind of get you the basics of AWS security, and I'm sure Microsoft does with Azure as well. And those are the sort of things where you want to get in and think, okay, why is this different than what I'm used to? And what does it mean to me? Because if you start looking at it at the end after you've implemented it, you've kind of lost your battle. So you want to start at the beginning and think, oh, I'm going into this and learn that then so that you can think about those risks along the way.
Yeah, I love that, Meg. And I'm really glad you pointed to Cyber Jitsu, and shout out to Mary and team for connecting us for this conversation. Because I think going very all the way back to the beginning, where I kind of joked that my threat model doesn't look like yours, because I don't think.
Right.
What I really want to point to here is that nobody has the same threat model, the same network, but we all have experiences that we can learn from each other. And I think groups like Cyber Jitsu and the materials and trainings you guys and gals bring to the community are extremely important, because it kind of takes you out of your own environment, gets inside the mind of others, and can all share.
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in as much as you learning about your network for information, expanding your people network to that end as well, because as soon as, you know, your network of people is sometimes shared experiences and sometimes just people you kind of meet along the way, and they end up being their invaluable resource, whether you follow them on Twitter or you meet up with them occasionally. I myself am in a job transition and reached out to a bunch of my networks from long ago and far away and thought, okay, you know, here I am, folks. And they were super helpful, you know, and that's, it's important for those networking connections and to understand people looking at things with different eyes always makes your network stronger. Always. So when you throw up your diagram and invite a bunch of different people in, they will see things you do not see based on their own personal threat models. And that's not a bad thing. That always makes your network strong.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Meg Layton, it's a pleasure to chat with you again.
Absolutely.
Thanks for this conversation. We'll definitely have you on the show in the near future.
Okay. Looking forward to it. Always good to chat with you, Sean.
Thanks, Meg. See ya.
All right. Bye.
Archer empowers organizations to manage multiple dimensions of risk on one platform with on-premises and software-as-a-service offerings, and quickly implement industry-standard processes and best practices for advanced risk management maturity, informed decision-making, and enhanced business performance. Learn more at archerirm.com. HITRUST is a leading data protection standards development and certification organization that strives to safeguard sensitive information and manage information risk for global organizations across all industries and throughout the third-party supply chain. Learn more at HITRUSTAlliance.net.
Imperva is the cybersecurity leader whose mission is to protect data and all paths to it with a suite of integrated application and data security solutions. Learn more at imperva.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Redefining Security Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.